Welcome to A Slab of Glass. I'm Jeff Perry. Each episode, I'm joined by my co-host, Christopher Lawley, as we discuss iOS and iPad productivity.
Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
It's going really well, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. So we are just coming off the week of WWDC. So WWDC is over when we're recording this. And I think there was a lot of really interesting things that basically came out of it. I saw a lot of people say the iPad users really didn't get that much, but you know, I don't really think that's true. We got a whole Stocks app. Like, we got the Stocks app, finally, Jeff. Right, so we're going to spend an hour talking about stocks. No, I'm kidding. Please don't stop listening. But personally, I do think we actually got quite a bit, but I think it was masked in the cover of iOS. Mm-hmm. We were going to kind of just go through a bunch of stuff and kind of discuss what it means for iPad users. I know a lot of different podcasts and stuff have talked about WWDC already, but I think it would be interesting for us to put it in the context as iPad users, what all this means for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think iOS 12 was a pleasant surprise. You know, with WWDC and everything else that kind of happened with it, we weren't really expecting anything. In fact, I was really surprised at how much that was actually packed into this keynote that they did. There definitely was some padding to it and things like that, but we got a lot of things with iOS 12 and, you know, outside of that with new apps and things that are coming with it. So I think that the iPad users did get a lot. I think the reason that most people are saying the iPad users didn't get anything is because there wasn't any like iPad specific things that were brought up, like, you know, the dock in iOS 11 or split view or whatever. But I think iOS 12 in general is a really good update for all devices. Yeah, I think that this WWDC was interesting and a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think right off the bat, they started talking about performance improvements. And everybody loved performance improvements, no matter if you have an older device or a newer device. I talk all the time about the only thing that it would take for me to upgrade my iPad is speed improvements. Well, now we're getting that for free in the form of the software update. Yep. I've seen quite a few people already talk about how they have older devices or like an iPhone SE or something that's not, you know, it's not an iPhone 10 or it's not the current generation iPad Pro, and they see a significant improvement. So that's going to be something everyone gets, no matter which device you have, as long as it runs iOS 12. And they made a really good point of if it runs iOS 11, it's going to run iOS 12. They're not cutting off support for any iOS device, any iPhone or iPad this year. So I think that's really interesting overall. I think it's important that they keep pushing those performance improvements. I know they kind of got some crap from, you know, over the last year with the battery issues and slowing devices down. So, you know, they wouldn't just shut off randomly in the middle of the day because the, you know, lithium ion batteries, they don't hold their charge forever. They degrade. Unfortunately, that's just where we are with battery tech. So overall, I think performance is kind of an interesting place. And they started off with that right away. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, I think that it was smart of Apple to start this off right off the top of here's battery performances on all these devices, including the iPhone 5S, which is 5 years old at this point. Mm-hmm. I think that it was smart for them to make that happen. But, you know, I saw some videos of people that had beta 1 on their device, and I was really surprised at how much faster it was with like opening apps and things like that. There wasn't any like speed tests or any like bench performance reviews or anything that I could find, but it seems noticeably faster for even just like things like opening an app. So if that is the case, I'm sure there's more backend stuff that's really good. The one thing I really didn't like was when they said, and if this is the only thing that we had for iOS 12, we would be happy for it. But of course, we didn't stop there. Like, are you kidding? like, why would you think that that was all you needed to do for an iOS update?
Yeah, I can kind of see their point. Like, performance upgrades are really, really important. And iOS 11 feature-wise was definitely not a bad iOS update. Performance-wise, it wasn't their best moment. But no. as far as feature-wise, it was pretty good. So I understand their idea of like, yeah, if we just focused on performance, this would be great. But we didn't. So I think we should be, you know, really happy they didn't. And one of the biggest features, in my opinion, the biggest feature and the most exciting feature to come out of this year's WWDC is Siri shortcuts.
Yeah, 100% agree.
When they started talking about it, I was like, is this what I think it is? And it is. It's the new workflow. So Apple bought workflow last year. I believe it was in March of 2017. I could be wrong on that, but that sounds right to me.
I think so.
And when they bought it, we weren't really too sure about what was going to happen. A lot of people speculated about, are they just going to get rid of it? Do they just want the developers? Do they just want the talent? Are they actually going to do automation for iOS? Or is this going to be ported to Automator for the Mac? I think there was a ton of speculation behind it. And I think we got the best possible outcome from this. I know we talked previously, Jeff, about what we both wanted from the workflow acquisition. And I wanted more system integration. You, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you kind of wanted it to be more left alone. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, I wanted, like, my whole feeling on workflow was if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, like, I felt that workflow was very good at what it was, but after seeing Siri shortcuts, I'm very cautiously optimistic on what Siri shortcuts could mean for workflow users like you and I.
Yeah, so we kind of talked in the last episode, and I kind of had this idea in my head about how different things could be triggered, and the notifications could be pushed, and it was just it was kind of all coming together even before I saw it at WWDC. So when the keynote was happening and I saw it, it all clicked for me, and I'm like, this is the absolute best possible situation that at least for me. I mean, are you happy with what we are getting out of Siri shortcuts?
There's definitely some unanswered questions that I still have for it, as I'm sure you do, Chris, but I'm really excited to sort of see what happens with Siri shortcuts. I think it actually puts Siri back on the map as far as voice operations. I don't want to say robot, but like, you know, there was a while there where like Alexa and Google Home were kind of the top two, and Siri was just sort of the distant cousin where it wasn't even close to catching up. But I think that this actually puts it back in the running for a powerful voice activated system, because while it might not be able to answer all of your questions, it does seem to be able to be a better personal assistant than like Google or Alexa could be.
I agree. So let's take a minute and back up and talk about what exactly it is, because there's actually a few different layers to this, and I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, and you watched the keynote, and you also watched the WWDC session. So kind of walk us through what exactly Siri Shortcuts is and what it means.
First off, Siri Shortcuts is custom Siri voice commands. So right now we have Siri Intents on iOS 11 and iOS 10. And basically that means you can use Siri, you can say the trigger word and say, call me a Lyft. Or you can say, send a message through WhatsApp or something like that. You have to specify the application. What's going to happen now is apps that use NS user activity, and this is something developers will have to implement, but it's actually fairly simple. Basically, what they can do now is they have certain actions, and they can tie those actions up, and you can record a custom command for it. So say I want, you know, a one that was used a lot was Starbucks. So say I want to order coffee from Starbucks. I could just say the trigger word and whatever my custom phrase is. So order me my drink. And that could be the drink that I order every single day at Starbucks. And I think that's really interesting that they're giving not the developers, not Apple, but the users control over what that needs to be or what that what that phrase, that custom command needs to be. Now, I said NS user activity is a way you can implement it. There's also a much more complicated and complex way of doing it. So if there's more complex actions that developers want to enable for users, there is a way to do that too. So this custom Siri command action, this is really cool. It'll show lock screen notifications so you can like interact with things. So if, you know, you order a drink, it'll show you the drink on your lock screen and then you can just confirm the order right there. All that I think is really, really cool. But here comes the kicker. If you want to do more than just that stuff, there's also an application, Siri Shortcuts, and it looks just like workflow. And from what we've heard, and unfortunately it's not out yet, even for people that are on the betas, it's not out yet. So really anybody outside of Apple hasn't really gotten a chance to play around with it. But from the people from within Apple, they've basically confirmed this is the new workflow. It will be workflow 2.0. It will support the stuff that workflow currently supports. plus more, so system stuff that I was getting super excited about, and my brain kind of exploded in the last episode. All of these things together will be in the application, so you can still do scripting, you can still do action-based stuff. It's still the block UI, so you drag and drop blocks and stuff in there. And I think this is really, really cool, because what's going to be awesome, and I'm not the first one to make this point, I think I've seen dozens of people make this point, is that big companies that didn't want to support workflow before, or didn't want to support X callback URL, so you couldn't all automate the application, they'll now have a good reason to support it, because it's something from Apple. It's something every user can just go and download from the App Store. I think we basically had it confirmed that Siri Shortcuts is not going to be something that's natively installed. It's going to be like Swift Playgrounds, where you have to go and install it from the App Store.
Yeah.
And so big companies like Starbucks, like I mentioned before, will now have a good reason to integrate with the app. And honestly, I'm just so excited. What do you think?
I think it's exciting with the idea of being able to integrate Siri into your app with like one line of code. That's what was basically said for the keynote in the State of the Union. But like, I know there's more, especially if you want deeper integration and things like that. But, you know, I've seen a developer that created Drafts 5, Greg Pierce. He already tweeted something along the lines of like a proof of concept of using Siri Shortcuts with Drafts 5. And he did that like a day after the keynote and started looking at the information on it and what you can do with Siri Shortcuts and get it to work properly. And it seems like it isn't as difficult as some other things that they've implemented over the years when it comes to integrations with new options, especially with Siri. So I'm really pleasantly surprised of how simple it could be. And at the same time, I think that it will allow for bigger companies to be like, yeah, no, let's integrate Siri. That way we can put it in all of our new commercials or, you know, whatever. Like, I think in the keynote that they used a coffee company called Phil's or something like that. And it was, this is what really blew my mind, is that like Siri has gotten a lot smarter of like learning your routine. And so, for instance, in the keynote, they brought up a thing where the person that was doing the demo was basically like, I get a coffee from Phil's every morning, and every morning now Siri will give me a notification of like, do you want to order your coffee? And then all you have to do is tap on it, and your coffee that you specify is ordered and ready to get picked up, and you're all ready to go. Like, that seems super interesting to me when it comes to the things that Siri could learn from what you do.
Yeah.
And the things that it could do for you, because there are many times where I do the same thing every morning, whether, you know, it's checking my news, checking, you know, what's going on with the weather or things along those lines. Like, it will basically give me all of my morning routines and whatever else I do during the day, and basically say, hey, do you want to do this? Because you do this almost every day at 3 o'clock or whatever. And that's interesting to me as well, as far as like additional options with it. But, you know, in the context of like workflow, I said before, I'm cautiously optimistic with it. Like, there clearly seems to be scripting involved with it. There seems to be more powerful stuff that they didn't mention in the keynote, but in the screenshots that they showed, there is those options. We won't really know until that app is available in beta or when iOS 12 comes out, which I hope isn't the case. I hope that they do introduce Siri Shortcuts in the betas down the road, whether it's when the public beta comes out or whatever. I want to be able to use Siri Shortcuts, and I want developers to be able to get their hands on it to sort of see what exactly they can do with Siri Shortcuts outside of just what, you know, these specific code lines can be done and what they can do for that. I want them to be able to play. I want the user and the developer both to be able to play around with Siri Shortcuts so we can get a better idea of what exactly is going on with it. You know, conversely, I am also worried that the workflow app will still be the superior app compared to Siri Shortcuts. You know, if it's a dumbed down version of workflow and they don't have all the intricacies and specifics that workflow has. Like, I use it a lot when it comes to editing images and basically like batch editing images and making it a possible thing where, you know, I strip the metadata out of it, I make it a specific size for my website, or, you know, whatever else. I change the format from a JPEG to a PNG or, you know, whatever else, and then I can upload it to Dropbox. Those are the kind of things that I'm worried won't be integrated with the new Siri shortcuts, because those are really things that I don't have to do with voice activation. Like I select my photos and I share it in the share sheet and open up workflow. Like those, like that's some of my big questions of like, will Siri shortcuts be implemented in the share sheet or will it be 100% voice only? You know, like that's what I'm worried about, because as much as I like having Siri being able to be my personal assistant, I don't want it to be the only option I have. I want to be able to use things like the share sheet and send things from one app to workflow or Siri shortcuts, whatever it may be, and be able to implement all these different actions that I've already created with workflow. So that's one of my biggest concerns when it comes to this. And I'm not trying to poo-poo the idea of Siri shortcuts. I'm really excited for what's going to happen with it, but I also don't want to have to sacrifice the things that I've made and done with workflow to sort of make that happen.
Yeah, I get that. I think I could put your mind at ease just a little bit, because I wouldn't say some of this stuff is confirmed. So let me back up a little bit. So the suggestion stuff that you were talking about, it's actually based on a few different things. So it can be based on location, time, or even your calendar. So if you have an appointment you're running late for and it knows that you're running late because you're obviously not there, you can like send a text message to the meeting organizer. Wow, I can't talk today. the organizer, and that will, you know, send him a text message. It'll tell him you're running late. It can even give him an ETA into how long you'll be there and things like that. So overall, like the suggestions are really smart. They're really powerful. They're customizable in the shortcuts, so, or in the shortcuts app. So there's a lot of stuff there. As far as all the workflow stuff, from what I've heard from people at Apple and just talking to people on Twitter and stuff like that, it will be able to do all the stuff that workflow does, and that we shouldn't be too worried. Mm-hmm. The nice thing is even if like there's certain things it can't do, like if it can't do your photo resizing thing, there are applications that could do that. I've used a couple. Like there are other ways of doing things like that. Like one of the things that I do a lot with workflow is I have it every time I do a new video, I have it shared to my Twitter account, the Untitled Site Twitter account, and then post it to my blog. I could use like a buffer or something like that to get around that. I just wanted to play with workflow, so I just have it that way. I wouldn't be too worried about Siri shortcuts, especially until we see it. And the nice thing about it being part of Apple and stuff like that is there's a good team behind it, and the team has money. The thing that always made me worried about workflow is I believe it was a $5 app, and that was it. You know, it's such a specialty app that I was like, there's no way they have concurrent revenue. They have revenue always coming in. And I was always afraid that the app would just shut down and just go away.
Yeah.
And that I always thought was the worst possible timeline. And I think I think we're at the best. I think we are I think we're doing good. I think there really isn't anything better that workflow could have went to, because I don't think where it was, it could have lasted.
I completely agree. Like when workflow, before it was acquired by Apple, I was tweeting at the team and contacting them of like, how can I support you? Is there any way that you guys are going to add like a tip jar or a subscription-based model or something to have a concurrent revenue that will allow them to continually develop it? And then when the acquisition by Apple came up, it was very scary. And I think the reason that like workflow is such a point of anxiety for many people and many power users of iOS is that there are no alternatives to it. Yeah, you can use things like IFTTT and Zapier for some things, but workflow is a unicorn app, and if that were to go away, I think that it would be a major step back in iOS productivity and using iOS as your main operating system, and in people that are iPad only or iPad first. If workflow were to go away, it could be a detriment to many users' workflows, I guess, for lack of a better word. So that's why I'm always very, very worried and very scared of what could happen with workflow. And seeing that Apple is doubling down on it and using something like Siri shortcuts is a breath of fresh air and a sigh of relief. But, you know, at the same time, I still have apprehension with it, because we just don't know. Until we know more, I don't know how calm I'll be about it. Like, I just don't want one of my most beloved apps to go away or to be dumbed down because it's going to be integrated with the main operating system and not be able to be as powerful as it once was, just so it could make my mom and my grandma use it as well. You know, that's my main concern. I'm not saying that that's going to happen. There's no real indication of that, but it's just me being very, I guess, pessimistic. That's kind of how I am in nature, but I just don't want sacrifice to happen with one of the most powerful apps on iOS. That's mainly it. I have a couple of other questions in regards to like what's going on with this.
Okay.
You know, like, and you might not have the answers, but these are the questions that I have on my website when I was talking about the Siri shortcut announcement was, will there be a limitation on how many actions can happen in a single workflow, I guess, or whatever it's called? I think it's called an action in Siri shortcuts, but will there be a limitation of how many things can happen in one action or one workflow? And also, when it comes to the scripting, will it just be X callback URLs, or will there be other options for scripting and things along those lines? Like, those are the only other two questions that I haven't brought up in this episode that I'm worried about.
So as far as limits to the amount of actions, I would highly doubt that. Maybe there might be some like arbitrary limit in workflow right now, like 128 actions or something like that.
Right, yeah.
From what I've seen and what I've heard, your current workflow actions should probably just work in Siri shortcuts. Now, again, haven't had our hands on it, so I haven't confirmed that. But from what I've heard, I'm honestly not worried at all. I'm really excited to get my hands on it. Let me put it this way. If I had to choose between Siri Shortcuts version 1 right now or workflow in its current state, I would probably choose Siri Shortcuts right now.
Wow.
Check this out. We have Type to Siri. We talked in one of our episodes about using Type to Siri as kind of a command line. Well, yeah. If you can create custom Siri, you know, phrases, that means you could type them. So if you're sitting with your iPad and you're, you know, at a coffee shop or in an office or something, and you don't want to yell at your iPad, you put on Type to Siri and you just type those shortcuts and those actions just happen. Like, that's something I'm just super, super excited about. As far as scripting goes, I imagine there will be support for what Workflow currently has. I actually wouldn't be surprised if when Siri Shortcuts comes out and people dig into the code of it, they find out the base is actually the Workflow app and there's just a new coat of paint on it. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's the same scripting stuff. What I would like to see from it, and it may not be in version 1, and I would totally understand if it's not in version 1, but I would like to see it eventually, is I'd like to see Swift support. Swift is Apple's programming language. There's really not a good reason why it couldn't support Swift, other than App Store rules and it being able to compile code, but it's an Apple app. They don't have to enforce it on themselves, right?
Right, yeah.
Overall, I'm definitely excited. I could be completely wrong. We're definitely going to be doing some follow up when the actual app comes out and iOS 12 comes out. But overall, I'm incredibly excited. The possibilities. I was sitting down yesterday and I was just kind of making a list of everything that I want to be able to automate that I can't currently automate right now with the current state of workflow. So I could be able to automate HomeKit stuff. That's something that's pretty big. They even gave an example on stage that I would use is when somebody was heading home, they set their thermostat to 70 degrees, they turned on their fans, they turned on the lights, and then they started playing NPR on their phone.
Yeah.
I mean, you can keep the NPR part, just play Overcast, but overall, like, I'm very, very optimistic about this. I guess we're kind of two sides of the same coin right now. Like,
yeah,
I have a really, really good feeling about it. And normally I would be worried about something like this. And not, like, if LumaFusion was acquired by somebody right now, I'd be freaking out because that's my bread and butter. That's the app I have to use for my work. Overall, like, this one, it doesn't worry me. I think we're gonna be okay, and I think everything's gonna work out. I think it's going to open up the possibilities to even more. And if we do lose a few things along the way, so be it. I think we're going to, in the long run, we're going to get more out of this application than what we were if Workflow stayed a third-party app.
You know, as I usually say here, Chris, I hope that you're right and that I'm wrong. But yeah, no, I'm excited for Siri Shortcuts. And it's probably the only reason that I'll put a public beta on my phone or my iPad before iOS 12 is officially released, is that if Siri Shortcuts is implemented, and I know that there's some things that you can do with the iOS beta 1 right now with Siri Shortcuts, it's just that the application isn't available.
Yeah, it's like stuff you already do a lot, it will suggest in settings. Just really quick, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter say, hey, beta 1 is stable, it's good. go feel free to put it on your main. Don't do that. I've also seen people lose data. I saw one person get completely locked out of their phone because the PIN encryption, or the SIM card encryption got all messed up. So beta one is not a good idea. If you are really excited for this, do the public beta. The public beta usually comes out beginning to mid-July, so we're almost there. It's funny, this is the first, so I'll put the public beta or the developer beta after there's been a few out on my device, because I want to do an iOS 12 review again this year. But I was thinking about it, and I think the first device I'll put it on is actually my iPhone this year, because for the first time, I think my iPad is more important than my iPhone. I used to have to use my iPhone for my day job a lot more for navigation and email and things like that. And honestly, now that I'm doing the podcasts and videos and stuff like that, my iPad is way more important than my iPhone now.
Yeah, I think I'm going to wait till public beta comes out, A, because I don't have a developer license or whatever you have to do to be able to get access to developer betas and things like that, mm-hmm. but also just because I've never had real inclination to implement beta 1 into a device or anything like that. I usually wait till beta 3, 4, which is when the public beta usually comes out. That's kind of where everything is. So
the other big thing that we got that I think will be really interesting to, you know, our listeners is notification improvements. There's three big parts to this. There's the notification style is changing. We have enhanced do not disturb and screen time. So let's start off with notifications. So First off, notifications are now grouped. So they're based on app, topic, or thread. And this is decided by the developer. So if you have a messaging app, so say you and I are chatting on iMessage, but I'm also chatting with my family in a group message. Those two can be separated. So the group notifications, there could be a thread of just me and you, and then there could be a thread of just my family talking. So it's really interesting. It's a little more smarter than just saying, okay, well, these are all the notifications from messages. Let's just group them together, and then, you know, you can figure out what's what. So I think that's a little smarter, and I really like that. But there's also now instant tuning. And what instant tuning is, and this is really interesting, and this is a quote, I'm quoting them, you press into the notification. So instead of calling it a force press or a 3D press now, they're calling it press into, which I don't really want to read into that. I just thought that was interesting that they're not calling it force touch or 3D touch anymore. So I think that's just interesting. When you press into a notification now, you can get the option to basically turn off notifications on the lock screen. So basically, and you won't see them when you just pick up your phone anymore. But if you unlock your phone and then swipe down and go into Notification Center, those notifications will be there. So if you don't want stuff showing up on the lock screen for either privacy reasons or like it's just really not that important to you, I think that's really interesting. So now you can put those notifications that you don't really want to turn off yet, but you don't think they're important enough to wake up your phone. You can just put them in Notification Center and you can check them out when you need them. I think this will be a really good place if you need like email notifications or something like that. I think this would be a really good place for those.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do is you can just turn notifications off completely for that app. And I'm somebody that broke this habit years ago. My habit now is when an app asks for me for notifications, I hit no and then I see what breaks.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people automatically hit yes. So especially with like free to play games and stuff like that, like, okay, it's time to get more gems and things like that. Like, I think this will be nice for people to be able to turn it off. So that's notifications. You have any questions or any thoughts on that part before we move on?
Yeah, and the thing with like notifications is that it also can tell when you haven't opened an app in a while, and you can basically like just turn off notifications immediately based on how long you haven't used it, which I thought was really, really smart of Apple to implement.
Yeah, Siri suggests that.
Yeah, it's a Siri suggestion of like, you haven't opened this app for a while, do you want to turn off notifications? That to me is awesome, especially to people like parents who have their kids play with their phone every once in a while, and they have like, you know, four or five apps that will give you like updates of like, here, you can get more gems if you open the app now and whatever. Like, and if the kid hasn't played it in a while, you can just turn notifications off immediately with it. And like that is super cool with it. And I think it also can help with people like me who install apps and try them and then kind of let them fall to the wayside and then I don't uninstall them. And I think that, like, if Siri to be like, hey, you haven't opened this app in a while, do you want to turn notifications off, would also be a red flag for me to really think about keeping it on my phone or not and kind of declutter as I go. Because if it hasn't been opened in a while, I can tell that, you know, maybe it's not necessarily something I want to have on my phone anymore.
I think there's going to be a lot to take a look at. As far as notifications, I think there'll be a lot of improvements. The next thing is we have Do Not Disturb got an overhaul. One really cool feature in here that I'm really excited about is basically it will hide all the notifications on the lock screen. So like when your phone's locked and you reach over, if you have an iPhone 10, just tap the screen or another iPhone, hit a button. It'll hide all those notifications while you're asleep. And that's huge for me because I'll roll over and I'll look to see what time it is. And then I'll realize I have emails or text messages and I'll wake up and I'll start replying. And then I'm up at 4 a.m.
Yeah,
so this is huge for me. And basically anytime you just re-enable it when you're ready to start seeing notifications that morning after you wake up. And I think that's huge. You don't necessarily start seeing them when your alarm goes off. You don't necessarily start seeing them while you're eating breakfast. You pick when you're okay. Let me open everything up now. I think that's really, really cool.
I think that is probably one of the better implementations of what's going on with notifications and things like that, because, you know, we've all been there where we wake up in the middle of the night and, you know, whether it's use the bathroom or whatever, and then we check our phone and we have like, you know, a ton of things from like Twitter, email, messaging, whatever else. And then you just feel like you have to handle it right then and there. And I think that is part of the, I don't want to say addiction, but like we just feel really connected with our phones. And if we don't handle the notifications immediately, you know, they could go away and we might forget about them or whatever. And a lot of people have done that. Like I've been up because since I work late shifts, you know, I don't usually go to bed until like 2 or 3 in the morning. And I got an email from my dad about something at like 2:30 in the morning. And he doesn't need to be awake that time. Like he works in normal 9-to-5 shifts, basically. I got the email from him and I emailed him back. I'm like, why the hell are you up this early? He goes, oh, I woke up and I saw this. I'm like, this is why we need these kind of things where it just hides notifications for a specific amount of time.
Uh-huh.
It's not just overnight. You can actually like set it to where you can have Do Not Disturb for a specific amount of time and then it will automatically turn off. Like if you're going to a movie theater or something like that, you can turn Do Not Disturb on for 2 or 3 hours. And then after the movie's over, you don't have to remember to turn Do Not Disturb back on or turn notifications back on. So I think that's interesting because one time I had Do Not Disturb on and I turned it on and then I forgot about it for 2 days. And my fiance, who kept trying to call me, was complaining about every time that she would call me the first time, it would go straight to voicemail. And then I realized, oh, it's because Do Not Disturb is on. So being able to have it on a timer or things like that is interesting as well, to be able to basically say, hey, turn this thing off after this specific amount of time, whether it's at like a family event or a movie, what have you. I think that's really smart for them to implement as well.
And it could be more than just a timer too. It could be based on location. So like you said, if you went to a movie, you can set it for leave Do Not Disturb on until I leave this place. So until you leave the movie theater. Then once you leave the movie theater, Do Not Disturb turns back off. Or you can even be based on an event in a calendar. So say you have a meeting or something. Do Not Disturb will be on for that entire course of that meeting. Now, that could be a little bit harder because I don't know about you, but I've been in meetings that are scheduled for a half hour and they go 2 hours. So that can be the little tricky part. Overall, I think Do Not Disturb got a big improvement. I really like that, and I'm really excited to kind of start playing around with that a little more. I know I like to turn on Do Not Disturb while I'm working or writing just because I don't want to see those notifications.
I think Do Not Disturb will be fun to play around with, but I think my favorite thing about the notifications and things like that is this next part, Chris, which is screen time.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of walk us through what screen time is, because I have a lot of ideas and thoughts behind this one.
So there's a couple of parts to it. So first off, you get reports on your device of seeing what apps you're using a lot, either apps and categories too. So this is kind of weird. So it looks at the category it's based on in the app store. So we'll take Drafts. Drafts is a productivity app. actually, it may be considered a utility. That might be a bad one to use. Let's say Ulysses. Ulysses is a productivity app. So if I'm using Ulysses, plus I'm using Fantastical, plus I'm using Things, those are all productivity apps. So it'll take the amount of time that I've used those together and it'll roll it in and it'll show the productivity category of how much time I spent there. Or if I'm using one app more than, you know, I probably like a lot more, it's a majority of that category, it'll also show that. So it'll probably on mine, it'll show Tweetbot is being used way too much. But that's kind of cool. So it'll show you what's going on. And then you can set up a limit based on apps. So I can limit myself to a half hour a day in Tweetbot. And as it starts to get close, it'll tell me that, hey, you only have 5 minutes left in Tweetbot. I can request an extension and it'll give it to you, but it'll tell you, hey, look, you probably should move along. You shouldn't be, you know, still on this application. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited about that part because it's going to kind of really help with me focus on my work a little more. I think we've talked about this before, but when I first went iPad only, I didn't have any of those apps on my iPad. It was only the apps I needed for work. I didn't have Tweetbot. I had messages turned off. I didn't have games or anything like that. That was big for me. So I think this is going to be a good way of allowing people to still have that time, but still be able to get their work done. The one thing I would like to see is lock this app until 5 p.m. at night, or lock this app until 7 a.m. or something like that. So that while I'm in the middle of my working time, I can't just flick over Tweetbot or something like that.
Right.
I think that would be kind of cool.
I don't know if that'll be a thing though, because I think that might be a security thing that they don't really want to have to happen. Like I maybe I'm wrong, but I think that might not ever really come. But the way that I see screen time is basically the time tracking app that iOS never got. You know, like that to me is how I think I'm going to be implementing screen time as a way to track what I'm doing, what apps I'm using, how long I'm using them, and really get a fine point on like how much productivity am I actually implementing with these things. And I think that being able to do that will allow me to make the first step in trying to make my work more streamlined, or for me to not have as many distractions. Because if I'm able to basically say, hey, I only want to use this specific app for a certain amount of time each day, and if I hit that limit, tell me no, and basically get me off of my, you know, like get me back on task, basically. And that's kind of what I need to keep from being distracted and doing the work that I want to. And, you know, there are other things that I've done in the past with like one blocker or things like that, where I will block specific URLs for a while. Like I block YouTube and Reddit on Safari so I can't open them. I don't have the YouTube app or the Reddit app on my phones or my iPad. I always do it through Safari to make it a little bit extra work for me. So, you know, with the content blockers that I've been on since iOS 9, I think, and with this new screen time, I think that it will really give me a good idea of A, how much time I'm spending on stuff that isn't really necessarily needed, and the things that I could be doing to make my work more productive, and also be able to implement blocks on specific websites to keep myself from being distracted. So though, like, that's what, like, this is probably the second most exciting thing for me when it came to the iOS 12 notes and the release notes and everything like that. Like, that was one thing that really got me excited, was being able to have a time tracking app, kind of. And I think that with screen time, it is probably the better time to get an idea of what you're doing with your device. And not only are they like telling you how long you've been using specific apps, Chris, but they also have interesting other interesting stats that they mentioned, like how many times have you picked up your phone? Mm-hmm. And yeah. I don't know about you, but like that's the most frightening stat I could come up with if I were to be tracked on how often I use my device, is how many times I pick it up.
See, Jeff, here's the way around it. You never set it down. If you never set it down, then it doesn't look like you picked it up again. So there you go. If you never set it down. Yeah, see, I think I'll just have one a day. I think I'll be okay. I'm not worried about that one.
Oh, Jesus.
Overall, I think screen time is really interesting. I think parents will like it. I think people that, you know, just need that extra push to focus on their stuff. I think it'll be a pretty cool app.
Yeah, especially with parents, like you can give your kid allowances and things like that. And not only will that device have screen time, but if you're a parent and you say, this is my child's device, you also get the screen time stuff sent to you to your device, which I thought was amazing because like I felt that a lot of people were really upset with the lack of parental controls and information that they get with their kids' devices. I think that a lot of kids who are watching this keynote or reading about it had an audible moment where they're just like, oh no. Like they just realized that like you can like literally lock apps with parental control and be like, you can't open this until I give you my passcode and specific allowances for certain times and things like that. And you can choose what apps are always able to be open, whether it's like a homework app or an education app. Like you can allow those to be open all the time, but you can like lock YouTube after an hour or you can lock whatever. And that was really interesting for me to sort of see because I felt that it was the best option for parents to get when it came to parental controls and things like that. Like I felt that was really cool.
My parents tried to implement things like that for me when I was a kid, and I just took that as challenge accepted. I used to get around those things like they were just butter. Now, obviously, they're a bit more sophisticated now, but yeah, those things did not work back in Windows 98 and, you know, when the internet started coming around and stuff like that. No, yeah. Challenge accepted. I would get around those things and so quickly. So I think this will be a real actual implementation of it because it is a system feature and not some third-party app that's installed that you can just, you know, force itself to crash.
yeah, basically. I mean, I think that they're really doubling down on parental controls with this one. And, you know, while I'm not a parent myself, I can be excited for parents who have to deal with their kids that are addicted to their screen. You know, like that seems to be like as someone that works in local news, that seems to be a contesting topic that's been going on for years now. Like we do a story every other week about it and of like how you can make your kids less inactive and have them go outside more and have them not look at their iPad as much and blah, 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 blah. I think this will probably be the best way for it to happen.
The next thing that we kind of want to chat about is photos improvements. And there's not a whole lot there, but what I think is really interesting is the photos improvements we did get this year are only iOS. The stuff that we got is not coming to macOS. So some stuff that we got is better search suggestions. So I believe it was iOS 10. I may be wrong about that. Brought in search suggestions or searching in photos, but now you can search based on moments, locations, people. It'll also index events and stuff like that. And then if you have an event or something like that in the For You section, you can share that with a friend and they get full resolution photos. And then they will also, if they have the same event in their photos albums, it'll suggest to them that they share it back with you and it'll complete that album together. So I think that's really cool that basically it's kind of their way of getting around photo sharing. So you're not sharing your whole album with somebody else and you're not getting, because I take screenshots and I take videos and stuff all day long. If I was sharing my photos album with somebody, they would absolutely just get furious with me. Not only would their device run out of space. I mean, there's a reason why I had to get the 512 gig iPad, but they would run out of space. They'd be so frustrated. I think this is a really good way of getting around that. I think because, you know, okay, you go on a family trip and now you can share the photos album with your family. So I think that's a good way of getting around it. I'm sure some people still want the, you know, true photo sharing, like let's share our whole albums together. But I think that would be way too much. I think it would cause issues. I see this as a better solution to that. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
I completely agree with it because like as someone that has a wedding in almost a year now, this is probably going to be like the most amazing thing to happen is that like, you know, while we aren't necessarily going to encourage people taking photos, like we hired a photographer to come with us for the whole day and to take really nice photos and things like that. But, you know, there's only going to be two photographers there pretty much. And, you know, it's a whole party of 150 people or so.
Oh, wow.
So there are going to be like needed like photos and things like that. And there are going to be missed moments if people don't take photos. So we're not going to really like tell them no photos except for during the ceremony. Mm-hmm. Like during the reception, do whatever you want. I don't care. But like the ceremony, it's not that much going on. Don't do that. But like with the reception and things like that, we want people to take like photos and things like that. And I think a really good way for us to get those photos originally was to use like a hashtag or something. So if people were to use it on like Instagram or Twitter or whatever, we can get that photo. But A, it's compressed, and B, not everyone's going to know what a hashtag is, especially, you know, my great aunt or whoever. Like they just won't know how to use it and how to like share it and things like that. Being able to be like, hey, you know, like 2 weeks down the line, I'm like, hey, do you still have those photos? And you can kind of like walk them through how to share those photos with us or, you know, whatever. And when they just send it, they send that entire album to us, and we can send the entire album to them, and they can show their friends at work or whatever. And like, it just seems to be the best way to sort of implement event photos. And I'm excited for it as someone that has a wedding coming up, that this will be implemented and well done and well documented by June of next year when I'm getting married. So I'm excited to sort of see what happens with it. And you know, if it does do everything that it says it does, which I think it will, it'll make my life a lot easier. And I'll be able to get more photos and everything else together so I can share them with friends and family that want them. And then it would just make life a lot easier for everyone.
Yeah, I think that's a really good use case. The other thing I want to chat about is, and there's not really a name, the code name that got leaked was Marzipan, but basically this is iOS apps running on macOS. And I know this is an iPad podcast, but I swear I have a point.
Wait, this isn't Marzipan, this is Sneak Peek.
Oh, well, whatever. they don't really have an actual name. I'm going to call it Marzipan because that's the name that we have for it right now.
No, I'm just making a joke.
So this is the thing that allows iOS apps to run on macOS. And I think this is really interesting because it's not necessarily iPhone apps, though you can, it does have Windows controls, so you can, you know, shrink it and it will go into the class view for the iPhone. But for the most part, people are going to be using the iPad app. So what I think this is going to do is this is going to cause developers to put a little more attention into their iPad app, because now, okay, not only is it running on the iPad, but it's also running on the Mac. So I think in the long run, and I didn't have too much I want to say on this, but I think in the long run, this will just give us better iPad apps. I don't really want to read into the tea leaves about, oh, I know they said they're not merging iOS and macOS, but maybe they're making some new platform or something like that. I don't really want to get into that because there's really no concrete evidence of anything either way right now, other than, you know, they're looking and building their own ARM Macs and things like that. But I just think that's interesting. I think in the long run, and it's not even shipping this year, it's shipping next year. So
yeah,
I think after that comes out, we'll start to see some improvements to iPad apps, and maybe we'll start to see even more new iPad apps as well, because hey, now they can run on two platforms. So I think that's kind of interesting.
It's basically seemed like a way for iOS developers that have really nice iPad apps and iOS apps that, you know, might not necessarily want to have to rewrite it all in for a Mac app. Like the way that it is right now is that if you write a code in Swift, it doesn't necessarily work for Mac. Like you have to rewrite the code. I don't know if macOS supports Swift or how it works.
It's not so much that it's Swift, it's UIKit. So on the Mac, how you design an app is it's called AppKit, and that's all the layouts and things like that. On iOS, you have what's called UIKit, and UIKit is way more sophisticated and way better in every way whatsoever as opposed to AppKit. AppKit, if you ever want to just torture yourself, try building a macOS app with AppKit. It's not fun. I gave up a long time ago on that. But so this gives developers a way to use UIKit on the Mac. So your Swift code base is pretty much universal. Like most of it is universal between macOS and iOS. But once you started to getting into UI elements, and once you start getting into like menu bar stuff and things like that, that's where stuff starts to diverge a little bit. I'm sorry. And Marzipan is basically just a way of bringing those two things together.
Like the best use case that I could really think of when it came to this was drafts. You know, like Drafts 5, I think is really, really powerful. And I think it's really interesting to sort of see them implement such power in the iPad app. Like, I felt that if you were to take the Drafts 5 app in its current form on an iPad as an iPad app and transfer it over to a Mac app with like a few additions to the menu bar and things like that, so it has a file and edit, a view, window, you know, things like that. Outside of that, like, I think that Drafts 5 is pretty much ready to go for a Mac app. You know, like, I think that this would be a perfect example of like what could be done with UIKit and transferring an iPad app over to macOS. And Apple, like, the reason this is coming out in like a year from now is that Apple is still working on it in their own apps. Like, they did four apps. It was Voice Memos, Stocks, News, and what was the other one?
overall, I think it's really interesting. I'm glad you brought up drafts, though. See, drafts, I think, would not be a good candidate for Marzipan, because as we know right now, I don't think it's going to hook into any automator actions or anything like that. And drafts, the whole idea behind it is automation. So okay. Drafts would really want to be a native Mac app. You wouldn't want to use the Marzipan version, the iOS version of drafts on Mac OS, unless Apple's going to open it up so it can hook into things like Automator and more system features like that. But if it's just completely sandboxed off, then I think drafts is a really interesting case that drafts would be a better Mac OS application than it would be a iOS application running on Mac OS. I think the one that I keep hearing and the one that I would actually want to use if I was still a Mac person is Overcast. Overcast is a great iOS application, but there is no native Mac client. There's a web client, but it doesn't give you the great features like Voice Boost or Smart Speed. So I think Overcast would be a great one. Tweetbot would be a good one. Well, Tweetbot actually has a fairly good native Mac application. I'm sorry. But like the native Twitter client, things like that. Like there's a lot of like good applications that can be sandboxed, that can be off on their own, that I think would work really well as a Mac OS or as an iOS app running on Mac OS.
Okay. Yeah. So I didn't really think about the sandboxing, the implementation of it, or the possibilities with it for it to not work properly. I think you make a good point with that. I think I was listening to the ATP conference, at going over WWDC at AltConf, and Marco brought up the idea of a Mac app for Overcast, but he didn't really confirm it. Not necessarily. I wasn't necessarily expecting him to do so, but it would be exciting to have like a native Overcast app that isn't based on the web app. Like I have one on my Mac right now that's like called Podcast Menu or something like that. It's basically just taking the web client and putting it in the menu bar.
Yeah, I actually think I tried that. I tried it because I think it's an open source project or something like that. And there was a huge bug in it, and it like used like all 16 gigs of memory in my laptop and things like that. And I was like, oh, nope, uninstall. Really? Yeah, go away. Yeah. No, I had some problems with it. So I tried that before. But yeah, I think overall Marzipan will be interesting. I think, and I really hope that it'll give us better iPad app implementation. So I think that'll be something that's really interesting. Speaking of the Mac got dark mode.
Yeah.
I think I tweeted about this like 4 or 5 times this week. I'm really annoyed the Mac got a dark mode before iOS. If somebody would have told me that last week, I would have thought they were crazy. If somebody would have told me, yeah, the Mac's going to get dark mode, like true native dark mode before iOS, I would have thought you're crazy, because there is no way of that. But what? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
I don't know, man. Like, I think that it might have just been easier for them to implement it, because like I was watching, I think it was the State of the Union, that they had like an idea of like how you can make an app into a dark mode and have a light mode with it as well. It seemed very easy to do with Xcode and, you know, just a few changes in the UI, whether it's using AppKit or, you know, a couple of different coding lines and things like that. Like, it was very easy for them to implement a dark mode with like any app. Like, it was just a couple of lines of code or a couple of changes in the UI kit or app kit, I should say. It just seemed really easy for them to do that. And I don't know if it's going to be necessarily as easy for iOS apps to implement, like, but you know, I'm not a developer. I'm not trying to sound like one or whatever, but like maybe it was just easier for Mac to get that. But I have to imagine that iOS either 12.1 or iOS 13 will have a dark mode with it. Like, they're so close. When iOS 10 came out, they had this adaptive dark mode basically through accessibility with inverse colors. Like, it was basically like Smart Inverse, where it would, and this is an accessibility app, so it would invert all the colors on it, but it would also use certain aspects of like switches in the settings and the setting icons and things like that. Like, those wouldn't change and invert their colors. And you know, if you were to use an app like Tweetbot, the photos wouldn't be inverted as well, and the profile pictures wouldn't be inverted. So there's got to be something coming, because I think that was a really good implementation of it. That was kind of a workaround, but seeing that now Apple is going hard on dark mode for Mac OS, I have to imagine that iOS will have a native dark mode coming soon. I mean, they have to see all these apps that have either true dark mode for the iPhone 10 or dark mode that have been around for years now to sort of give it that option. Like, you know, Drafts, Tweetbot, a bunch of other apps that I use all have dark mode options with it. And I'm slowly starting to use more dark mode things. Like, I switched to dark mode for drafts and Tweetbot just to sort of see how it felt. With this new dark mode for macOS, I was like, maybe I could try it and see what happens. And I have to say, I like it a lot. And I think a native iOS dark mode isn't too far in the future. Like, I think it's going to become, whether it's, you know, later in iOS 12 or iOS 13. Like, I don't know. Like, I think that they may have waited on iOS to be announced with the dark mode because they haven't announced the new phones yet. And if they're maybe making a iPhone lineup that's all OLED, like, it would make more sense for them to implement a dark mode because OLED screens are more power efficient in dark mode. They look a lot better in dark mode compared to LCD screens. So I wouldn't give up too much hope yet, Chris, when it comes to dark mode coming to iOS. Maybe it will come in iOS 12. They just haven't announced it yet, but, you know, who knows?
I think if we were to get dark mode, I think it'll show up in iOS 13. I don't think it would be something, because if it was something that showed up in September, it would be something specific to those devices. And I don't think we're going to be getting OLED iPads. I don't think all of the phones will be getting OLED screens. So I think it will be something that hopefully we get in iOS 13. I'm so shocked that macOS got it first.
I do think that there's some other things that happened with iOS that is interesting. Memoji, we didn't really go into, but for anyone that was a big fan of Animoji, you can now use Animoji with basically your own face, which I thought was neat. I don't use it necessarily, but, you know, maybe down the line we can take a look at it and talk more about it. I just think it was really cool to sort of see finally group FaceTime, where you can have up to 32 people in a specific FaceTime call. Like, that seemed a little excessive, but maybe, you know, it's good for enterprise users or something like that, where you could have that many people. And I thought the demo for it was really, really cool and really neat. And the fact that you can have things like Memoji and camera filters and things like that with FaceTime is fun. I think that'd be a fun way to have group calls with your family or whatever. Those are the main things with iOS that I felt were kind of neat when it came to iOS 12 and at WWDC. Is there any other, like, quick things that you want to throw out in this lightning round, Chris?
You know, I'm good. I'm really, really excited about Siri shortcuts. Like, yeah. Siri, I can't wait to get my hands on it. Like, I'm so excited about it. it's gonna be a fun summer. I know for me, I don't know what your plans are, but I definitely plan on doing another iOS review. So I'm gonna do an iOS 12 review, and then I will do probably a series of videos jumping into Siri shortcuts kind of go over everything. I know I've been asked a lot. My number one requested video is more workflow videos, and I was kind of on the fence about doing them because I was like, I don't know what's happening with it. And workflow is one of those apps. It's a big app. It's not something you can just, you know, slap together over the weekend. So I was kind of a little worried about it. I was like, I don't want to waste time. Like, there's other really cool things going on. And I'm kind of glad I held off, because I think Siri shortcuts will be a great way for people that aren't really sure about workflow to jump in here. And Siri just went off. That's standing. So Siri just went off. Thanks. Thank you, Siri. I'd also like the ability to mute Siri as well. but overall, I think this will be a really good place for people to jump into Siri shortcuts if they didn't use workflow. And for those that were using workflow before, to push their skills beyond what it currently was. Because, yeah, there's a lot you could do in workflow. But like I've said a gajillion times already, I think there's going to be more you can do.
I'm excited to see what happens with it and where things are going to go with it. You know, with that, Chris, where can people find you online if you wish to be found?
I still don't wish to be. I'm kidding. No, please find me. It's theuntitledsite.com is where you can find links to my YouTube channel where I talk about iPad stuff. I kind of have a more structured nature to those videos. They're a little more formal. I just published a video about Drafts 5, some tips and tricks on that. So if you're looking for stuff that goes a little more in depth into apps or a little more in depth into the iPad stuff, that's a bit more formal, check that out. You can find me on Twitter at Chris_Lawley. That's LAWLEY. Jeff, what about you?
You can find me over at tablethabit.com or over on Twitter at I am Jeff Perry. You know, you can always find show notes and stuff for A Slab of Glass over at slabofglass.com. This episode is episode 9, so aslabofglass.com/9. You could tweet us at A Slab of Glass on Twitter, And if you have any questions or anything that you want to share with us, you can email us as well at aslabofglass@gmail.com. So, you know, with that said, Chris, I'm excited to sort of see what happens with iOS 12 and what this might mean for future generations of the iPad, and if there's going to be a change in the new iPads, which we could probably talk about at some point soon once we have some more finite information on it. But I'm excited to sort of see how iOS 12 is implemented with, you know, everything.
Yeah, me too. I think iOS 12 is going to be a really interesting release. I think it's going to be an interesting summer. That being said, thank you guys so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.